This is so old that there's very little that, for all practical purposes, can be accomplished. Another problem they have is that the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Portland District Office has a cut line on cases, as all prosecuting attorneys are nowadays.
Sure.
Too many cases, not enough attorneys, and a lot of times these are more minor cases and they just drop out the bottom.
Right.
It would be probably an additional enforcement aspect to protecting these birds if state law was in line with federal law.
Just one final question. Does your game division have any position on this bill, or are you supportive of it, or are you concerned about it? What's your position?
We support the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions, Mr. Hyatt?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hamby.
What might be the penalty provision for a, I don't notice it in the bill, or the reference, what kind of penalty might someone face?
Chairman Bradbury, Senator Hamby, the penalty would be a Class A misdemeanor, as with all other game violations. Maximum fine, $2,500 or 1 year in jail. For practical purposes, the fine would probably seldom exceed over $150 or $200. Mm-hmm. In the case of an eagle, which people are very interested in, I would expect the fine may be higher.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you both very much. Appreciate it. I'd like to call David McManaman. Morning.
Morning.
Identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed.
my name is David McManaman. I live at Corvallis, Oregon, and I am retired from the Department of State Police. 7 years as a game enforcement officer and 17 years as a supervisor of game enforcement duties. I wish to speak in favor of this this bill also. In my years, it started out way back before the federal law even protected the birds, and I saw them go to a fairly low ebb, and for no apparent reason, indiscriminate shooters. And I favor this and have worked with the Corvallis Audubon in bringing this before the group. And I know that your time is short and you have many others to hear, and I have provided you with testimony. Would there be any questions?
I had a question based on your testimony. Two things. One is, you say in your testimony, it should be noted that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife administrative rules already agree with federal law.
Yes, they do.
And that leads to some confusion. Can you explain that a little bit further?
Well, of course, the statute does not address the protection at all. The administrative rules corresponds with the federal law. So we cannot, I say we, still speaking as been retired for 2 years, but... The confusion that existed between the officers and being able to enforce it was just, it came down to not being able to enforce it at all. Many times we would assign the case to be investigated, and when it became apparent that it couldn't be prosecuted under state law, the information would be turned over to the federal agents and go from there.
So from what you're saying here is it has been a policy investigate and then turn over the completed reports to Fish and Wildlife.
When
the
report was sent into the office, we would send and have it investigated. But when it became apparent that it was not an Oregon statute, we would turn that information over to the federal agent.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Raleigh Rousseau, Department of Fish and Wildlife. You don't look like Raleigh Rousseau.
It's a real convenient.
Senator Bradbury, members of the committee. You know, my name is Bill Haight. I'm the non-game staff biologist with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Raleigh was called into another hearing.
That's fine.
The statement that's being passed out now is in support of the passage of House Bill 2872, and if you please, I'll just let that go with that. The bill is, well, it will really not adding additional restrictions to existing laws, either federal or state, but it will make it more consistent with the other federal and state regulations. If you have any questions, I can answer. I'd be happy to.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Thank you for being here today. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2872? Now we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2872. We will open the work session as soon as we have four votes here, which will be in a few minutes when Senator Day gets back from Senator Starkovich's office. In the meantime, I want to continue on here and open a hearing on House Bill 2035. Call Raleigh Rousseau. I guess. Well, here we are again. Okay.
Senator Bradbury, members of the committee. My name again is Bill Haight. I work for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'll just read this statement if you
fine
allow me.
You bet.
Oh, God.
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife supports passage of House Bill 2035. Presently, landowners are not required to report the taking of bear, bobcat, cougar, and red fox when the animals are creating damage to the individual's land, livestock, or crops. Cougar are not abundant in Oregon, excuse me, and hunting season on these species are extremely limited. Most hunting seasons for cougar are in response to damage complaints. Bobcat populations are of concern both statewide and nationwide because of their valuable spotted fur. Bobcat seasons in Oregon have been allowed by international treaty only because they have been closely regulated and monitored. Bear and red fox are taken in general seasons. Populations of these species are extremely difficult to monitor or census, and information gathered from hunting seasons is invaluable in regulating future harvest. While reports of bear, bobcat, and cougar taken under depredation are received from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and some timber companies, a record of all these animals taken in the state is not made available to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The Department of Fish and Wildlife does not wish to interfere with the landowner taking wildlife that is damaging his property. However, passage of House Bill 2035 requiring reports of these animals when taken would benefit regulating future harvest of bear, bobcat, cougar, and red fox by providing complete harvest information. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife respectfully requests passage of House Bill 2035. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair, I'll
Senator
make a
Hamby.
Brief comment because of some of our earlier testimony this morning. I'm really supportive of the bill because I wasn't aware that there wasn't a routine reporting. And I would certainly think it would help.
Well, I'm just trying to understand. There were some changes made in the House. They don't seem like they're a big deal at all, but it seems like it's directed at, by using the word person, it seems like it's directed at, let's see, what does that allow then? It allows individuals, corporations, funds, partnerships, and joint stock companies to be the person who lawfully occupies the land, which they do today. And the person who obtains the permit. What I want to know is what is the benefit? Why do we have a provision in here that allows the landowner to give someone else a permit to do the? Is that, well, explain
this. This has been a common situation with timber companies hiring an agent to do the controlling, particularly on bears. Okay. Now, whereas the company representatives don't have the time and personnel to go out and do that control work, they do hire an agent to do that. What we're asking here is that the agent has some authority or documentation on their person that reports of the damaging animals be made.
Well, I understand the report. That's real clear to me. I guess, is this, is the reason you want them to have a per- set it up such that, let's just take Weyerhaeuser Tree Farm in Coos Bay, big tree farm, 250,000 acres. Clearly, they don't, I mean, they would contract with some bear trapper or whatever to take care of bear or whatever.
Yes.
Why would that person need to then have, I guess I just need to understand in terms of enforcement or what, why do they need to have a written authorization from the landowner? For what purpose would that, serve?
I'm just wondering what purpose it serves.
Well, I think this does provide a certain amount of control to make sure that the damaging animals are the ones that are being targeted. It could be a situation where somebody out there recognizing there's some damage is just out hunting bears and perhaps is even going off of the property where the damage is occurring. We've had that situation where somebody who is supposedly taking care of a damage problem is miles or a distance away from the property that is intended for the damage control. And so this does get it back to, helps get it back to the problem.
Okay. Further questions?
23. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Al Wilson from Oregon Forest Industries Council.
Al Wilson, Oregon Forest Industry Council. We support this bill. Our interest is only in the bear provisions. And to briefly go back, we had an Attorney General's opinion in the interim that said the present language allowed only the landowner to go out and remove the bear. That man, George
that
Weyerhaeuser.
Had to go trap the bear.
Had to go trap the bear. The landowners don't want to do it.
Okay, so that explains why you're... All right.
But so we wanted to correct that so that we could give a authority to a bear hunter to go out and remove a bear that was doing damage. The state police, we met with them, and they had a concern about this program. If we do that, how will they know the good guys from the bad guys out there? And they asked that a permit process would solve that. I went back to the woodcutting permit bill that we passed in 81 and use that as an example.
What a bad choice. So it's basically the desire to, the reason you want a person who's out on contract for warehouse or whatever taking bear, it's enforcement that you were trying to make sure that everybody knows that they can prove what they're doing rather than just out hunting or whatever. It's an enforcement question that you can ensure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And our people already give permits. They have no problems with reporting to Fish and Wildlife, and some, we've been doing some voluntary reporting in the past to let them know what bear are taken. Other than that, we support the bill.
I had a question, I guess, for Fish and Wildlife, as much as you could stay up here for a minute if you would. How are we going to get the word out it's clear we can get the word out to the timber industry, that's easy. But how are we going to get the word out to, there's a lot of other landowners that are not in part of a large association or whatever. I'm specifically thinking about the sheep ranchers in my district. I'm sure other people can think of other. How are we going to get the word out that they have to report this taking?
I think we do have, Senator Bradbury, we do have the opportunity to inform these groups through their various associations and through news releases. I hope that we can cover a lot of the state and get that word out should this bill pass.
What is the penalty if you fail to report?
Should probably refer that to Major Hyder, but I would assume it would be a Class A misdemeanor again.
Thanks, Al.
Again, for the record, my name is Roy Hyder, State Police, Game Division. Again, all statutes relating to fish and wildlife violations are Class A misdemeanor.
Mr. Senator Denny.
You see a period of time that when this word, you got to get the word out. And you see a time where a warning could be issued, or how are you going to go about it?
Chairman Bradbury, Senator Day, That's exactly right. We do see a period of time. Our normal process with the new regulation is to go through an information period. Warnings are one of the best ways to do that. Following news releases, following meetings with the Sporting Dog Association, who are the people that will affect these kinds of control, and contact with the industry associations.
I wouldn't want to see a situation where a sheep rancher in Coos County got charged with a Class A misdemeanor because he didn't know he had to report and he didn't. I mean, we've dealt with this on other issues having to do with reporting water rights and use of water and everything else. We don't want people to get hit for the fine just because they didn't do something they didn't know they had to do.
After a while, that ignorance is not a defense, but
that's
for
correct.
A while, I mean, we even give the superintendent a chance when he fishes in the wrong place.
And he's my constituent.
Chairman Bradford.
And I used to fish with him all the time, and he ought to know better.
Your point is well taken.
I thought it was.
That's a convincing argument, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Is there, Raleigh, why don't you come up too? I certainly have no problem with the bill. I want to make that real clear from the start. The only problem I potentially have is sort of some kind of guarantee to landowners that aren't part of big associations that they're not going to get slapped the first time they fail to, within the next year or two, when they fail to report. Do we have any standard way that we sort of phase these things in by making them effective, making it a lesser penalty for the first little period of time or something? I mean, I think most people would want to, they'd be happy to report. I don't think there's any big problem, but I just wouldn't want to see people.
Mr. Chairman, I came in a little late, but I understand Major Hyder pretty well. I think from our point of view would address that in the sense that any time there's a new law that some folks may not be aware of for some time until we get information out and have some time to make it work over a period of a year. Certainly, I think it's been the policy of the state police and certainly our department that we do not come down hard on folks. We have a number of mechanisms in which to get the word out. I don't think we're talking, first of all, about a lot of landowners, individual landowners in the sense of cougar and bobcat.
You're probably right.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't that many problems with cougar, for example. There aren't that many cougar in the state. Now, there are some, but, I mean, we're not talking about a great deal.
No, it's true.
Of problems. Bear is generally more of the timbered lands and industry lands, which are, for the most part, better informed because they have associations.
Right.
I don't foresee a problem in that respect, Mr. Chairman.
You comfortable with this, Mr. Chairman?
Well, yeah, I want to get on the record what they're saying about how they think it's being enforced. Okay. They're sort of saying, trust us, and that's okay.
I always trust the state police, but... And one of the things is I had to kid the major a little bit because I fished the Santa Yam with your superintendent for more years than you are old, probably. And he ought to know better, tell him. Okay. He ought to know better.
Okay, fine. Are there any further questions for the witnesses? Thank you very much.
I have one question, Mr. Chairman, if
Mr.
I may.
So.
I think it should be raised on the record, and it certainly is a mechanical thing, but as you know, the bill you dealt with just before 2035 mends the same statute, but a little differently.
Right. Our committee administrator is aware of that, and that there's a conflict or whatever. We need to get those two resolved.
Fine. Thank you.
We have a mechanism in legislative council. I just had to go through this with the banking bill that puts it in automatic drive.
Auto drive.
to do that, and it's a worry, but I believe it's...
Yeah, we are aware of that, and I appreciate you bringing it up.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2035? If not, we'll close the hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2035.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day. Senator Hamby, go ahead.
It's your turn.
It's
your turn, Senator.
I will move House Amendment Bill 2035 to the for the Senate with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Hamby moves House Bill 2035 as amended by the House to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
I'd like to speak to the motion, please.
Senator Day.
I had the chance to meet a gentleman several years ago in Idaho who actually treated and helped eagles who had been shot and wounded. And we dedicated the first national rookery over there on the Hell's Canyon area because of this gentleman. I don't think he's alive anymore, but he was a member of the Audubon Society and quite a character. And I just think what they're doing is super, and there's a lot of activity in that area from injured birds and what have you, or when there's spills and they go to the beach, that they, I think, got to be complimented for that. I don't know whether they're still here, and I had to leave for a minute because we've got 100,000 things going on here right now. But
gee, it's that time, isn't
it? They're still here. I hope they know that a lot of us appreciate their efforts.
We still have to take action on that bill.
2872.
Well, I know we do. I'm just explaining my...
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm done talking.
No, I know. I was just saying...
I just wanted to thank him.
Okay. Yeah. I was just saying we haven't finished that bill yet. Let me restate Senator Hamby's motion. Senator Hamby moves to send House Bill 2035 with House amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation, including any conflict amendments necessary with 2872.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion on the motion? Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Day?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye.
Senator Bradbury.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Senator Hamby, would you be kind enough?
Certainly.
Can I move 2872?
Now, I'd like to open the work session on House Bill 2872.
I would like to move House Bill 2872 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Senator Day moves House Bill 2872 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
And with the idea that we'll resolve the conflicts between the two.
Right.
Okay.
Is there any discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye.
Senator Day?
Aye.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye. I'll carry that bill. Now we have two bills left. One more for hearing, House Bill 2702.
Where's the witness sheet, Maria?
Is there someone here? Whether our administrator could just explain the bill. I think there's some complication for this. I'd like to know a little more.
Yeah, I do too. Is there someone here to testify on?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here representing Randy Miller. Randy Miller, and I don't have any prepared testimony.
Can he be found, or is he?
No, he was supposed to be here this morning, and something came up in Portland.
You know about the bill?
I'm familiar with the bill, but I don't have any prepared testimony.
Well, can you tell us about the bill?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Why the bill?
We have our name.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we need your name for the record and all that good stuff.
My name is Kathy Epley, and I'm Representative Randy Miller's legislative aide.
Why the bill?
Why the bill?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Why the bill?
Okay, well, this bill would have the practical effect of allowing the district attorney and law enforcement to determine the level of prosecution for violation of wildlife laws, of wildlife law cases based upon discretionary criteria known to law enforcement. And the reason that we feel this bill is necessary is because of a State versus Cho case that came up in 1984, which changed the way in which violations were pleaded. And we would like to return it to the pre-State versus Cho period.
Did we do something in 2035? That's
not. Well, I agree. I think we need to take a closer look at this.
Can you give me any information on State versus Cho? What that case? We have some expert assistance here. Maybe Mr. Johnson can tell us, and then Mr. Heider and Mr. Rizal, you want? Okay. Jeff, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, in State versus Cho, a defendant was charged with selling parts of a game mammal, that's a bear, an alleged breach of the Oregon statutes prohibiting that sale. The state did not allege a culpable mental state with respect to that offense. And the trial court the trial court held that no culpable mental state was necessary to be proved. That was upheld by the Court of Appeals and reversed by the Supreme Court. And
what, the Supreme Court then said that you had to have
a
intent?
You had to prove a culpable mental state.
I guess I don't understand it. This bill requires a culpable mental state. I don't understand.
I don't
either. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
would Senator Henderson yield to a question? Now, my mental state is kind of shaky.
Not possible.
And I just need a little help. Will you help me through? What the hell is going on here? I don't understand it at all.
Well, my understanding of criminal law, that in order to prove anyone when you're prosecuting any kind of a crime, you have to, part of an element that needs to be proved is an intent to commit the act. Mm-hmm. In addition, you have to have the conduct and you have to have the intent. So, now I guess they charged, I was just reading over this, all we have is staff
members,
is that apparently they have a lower, they have a violation that they can prosecute them for, which doesn't require a criminal intent, because it must only carry a fine and not a
you don't have to show intent.
Well, I assume that is kind of unclear from this, but I would say that of course for anything that's going to be of a criminal, that it's a crime, you have to show intent.
Class A misdemeanor.
That's a
is
crime.
A crime.
Petty crime.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, could you enlighten us, Major?
Please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, Senator Hendrickson. I'll take a shot at this. Again, for the record, my name is Roy Heider, Major Division Commander for the State Police Game Division. Mr. Johnson's description of the Cho case was very accurate. And the result was, before Cho, game violations, which are Class A misdemeanors and crimes, were crimes for which a culpable mental state was required. Crimes less than a Class A misdemeanor, which are not required by statute to have intent or a culpable mental state, don't need one. Game violations of the game statutes did not have a specified within statute culpable mental state due to the fact they were written originally prior to the culpable law, culpable right. statutes. As a result, another statute applied wherein if a Class A misdemeanor was not required by statute to have a particular culpable mental state, that's a tough word. There are four different stages of culpable mental state. It's either intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or negligently. If that was not required by statute, then at least negligence had to be alleged and proved. Otherwise, the charge would be carried forth as a violation, which is an offense, but of a much lesser value, with a maximum of a $250 fine and no jail penalty. In Cho, the Court of Appeals upheld the trial court decision and saying that no culpable mental state was alleged, therefore the case could be carried forward as a violation, but could not be carried forward as a Class A misdemeanor. The Supreme Court reversed that and said that without a culpable mental state, there is no offense.
There's no offense?
There's no offense. The charge is not valid.
A Class A misdemeanor charge or a lesser charge?
The Class A misdemeanor charge, and there is no option for it to fall back to a violation.
They couldn't plead it down.
Oh, I see. They couldn't plead it down.
Therefore, The bill before you simply provides that the district attorney or the court could carry a violation is a bad term, an offense of the Fish and Wildlife statutes forward through court without a culpable mental state as a violation.
The lower, oh, I
today see. They cannot do that. Oh, they all have to go as Class A misdemeanors with the passage of this bill, as I understand it, and I'm sure Legislative Aide on my right may have some enlightenment there as far as Representative Miller's bill, would provide the courts the option, the courts including the district attorney, the option of carrying a Class A misdemeanor forward as a violation, a lesser crime, a maximum of $250 fine, to wit, no angler license. Does it really have to be a Class A misdemeanor? The courts can do otherwise.
Senator Henderson.
Well, I guess probably the problem is the officers are citing them under the misdemeanor, and then if it turns out after they get to the district attorney that there was no, they examine the facts, there's no intent, then apparently the district attorney had no authority to reduce the charge and carry it forward as a violation. Sounds like it's a problem. Mm-hmm. So this gives them the flexibility to cite them into court on a misdemeanor charge, and then if it turns out they don't have the criminal intent necessary to file a criminal charge, they can charge them with a violation, which is like a civil thing.
Yeah.
It only has a